Our second case for this morning is Prestwick Capital against Peregrine Financial Group. And it looks like when everybody takes their place, we will hear first from Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Philip Smith. I represent the appellants, Prestwick Capital Management 1, 2, and 3, on appeal from the grant of summary judgment to Peregrine Financial Group, which I'll refer to as PFG. Prestwick was three Canadian funds who invested $7 million at the behest of an introducing broker called AccuVest in about 2005. At that time, Prestwick was informed that AccuVest, a small two-person shop, was guaranteed by a larger financial institution, PFG.
So did Prestwick invest directly? It's an account holder at AccuVest. It's not doing this through this Maxi Partners entity, or?
It did both. It first invested directly through AccuVest and had an account at PFG in its own name. But then AccuVest advised it to invest in a commodities pool called Maxi Partners.
So when did that change happen?
Approximately 2005, I believe.
All right. So the reason I'm interested in that is that the partnership offering from Maxi has language that sounds like there's just no right to any notice or anything. It says the general partner reserves the right in its sole discretion to change the partnership's brokerage and custodial arrangements without further notice and so on. So I wonder if any of this matters, if it's really Maxi that was the one who was disadvantaged when the guarantee arrangement stops.
The district judge did determine that Prestwick was a customer under the Commodities Exchange Act. A participant in a commodities pool is a customer. It is the customer's funds that were traded without authorization here and put back into the account after it was redeemed, and it has standing to sue under the Commodities Exchange Act for AccuVest's unauthorized trading, for which PFG is guaranteeing FCM.
So here's the problem. You know, actually, there are very unattractive things about both positions in this case, but your opponents, you know, argue that if you read the guarantee agreement to cover any account that was opened between 2004 and 2006, 20 years out, you know, suddenly there might be some, it reminds me of insurance arrangements actually with long tail liability. Somebody might suddenly see this. There's no ability to monitor after the guarantee agreement stops. And however fictional you think it may be, it's my understanding that the Commodities Exchange Act itself sees the stake of the broker, the $45,000, as a substitute for the guarantee. You know, we all may think that's fanciful, but that's what the statute seems to say.
Well, it does say that, and if the account were closed. And I just want to address this perpetual liability theory, and that was kind of the tenor of the district court's decision, which is your reading of this can't possibly be tenable because it imposes perpetual liability. There hasn't been any discovery, and there hasn't been any evidence of what the industry standard is, but both the guarantee agreements in 2004, 2006, the customer opening agreement says that PFG can close the account for any reason at any time.
But you make a big deal that the repapering and stuff, but I don't know I mean, this may be completely ignorant, so I apologize, but it seems to me closing an account could have ancillary consequences for the account holders, whether it might be tax consequences or whether it might be other kinds of consequences. I'm uncomfortable just sort of saying, oh, well, you just could have closed it all down and reopened it the next day.
Well, if you're obviously Prestwick is not going to invest $7 million through AccuVest. It has no assets whatsoever. If it had $45,000, it might have met the regulatory minimum. But if a large account like this is going to be cut off from a guarantee, it's not much to expect the futures commission merchant to say, look, we're either going to close your account because we don't want to guarantee it anymore, we don't trust AccuVest or whatever their reason is, you can either...
At $7 million, why didn't you write it into the agreement if you wanted that sort of extended coverage?
I have no idea. If I was advising them at the time, I suppose it would be.
Well, that's germane, I think, because if it was a gaffe in the way the agreement,
well,
the guarantor...
I think the managers of Prestwick were pretty sophisticated people, and what they did do was their due diligence that it was guaranteed by PFG, which was a large financial institution.
After 2006.
It was in 2005 and 2006. It's on a website.
No, I said after 2006.
After 2006, the website, I don't know what it reflected, but I would assume that if they... PFG wanted to inform the world that AccuVest was no longer guaranteed, it would change the notification. I don't know whether it did or not.
I want to follow up a little bit on what both my colleagues are saying. It appears to me, from looking at all this, that there's no underlying regulatory duty to notify account holders of this kind of change from a situation where there's a guarantee to a situation where the broker has the $45,000. The broker is responsible individually, and there's a stake. So in the absence of a regulatory duty, it does seem that you could write into the agreement, you know, we want to be notified, and then it would be up to the account holder to decide whether it was in their best interest to simply close the account and reopen under some different term or let the account stay under the new terms. The account holder could make an intelligent decision. But am I correct that there's no regulatory duty to notify?
There is not. Maybe I back up a little bit. The theory of our case is that once the guarantee is in place, the guarantee agreement provides that it doesn't terminate the obligations that were incurred while the agreement was in effect. So
that's if an injury occurs during that time.
We don't believe that that's the right way to read it. It doesn't say whether there's a violation. We guarantee any liability arising out of a violation of the Commodities Exchange Act. It says we guarantee performance of the introducing broker and all obligations of the introducing broker under the Commodities Exchange Act with respect to all solicitations and transactions and accounts open during the term of this agreement. The obligation of the introducing broker here in our submission is that it not trade the customer's funds without authorization, and that continued while the account was open. And it's our submission that whatever they say
I thought that it was agreed that the alleged fraud occurred in, well, the fraud, we can stipulate, there was a fraud, I guess, in 2007.
Yes.
So the question is whether the agreement reaches out to incorporate events in 2007. Let me add a little bit to my question, then I want to hear your answer. Is there something that should be made of the fact that this is a duty that arises and is imposed on the introducing broker, so that you could say that there's a point at which he's not introducing the transaction anymore, and that it's the nature of inducing an investment that warrants this sort of added protection, and after that you have to monitor your own affairs. But it's that the AccuVest as an introducing broker doesn't schnooker investors into a transaction that is a sham to begin with, that there's nothing there.
Well, the introducing broker, the name implies that its job is to introduce new accounts to the futures commission merchant, but it also provides investment advice, and that's what we
So you don't attach any significance to the term introducing broker. You think it's forever the broker?
Well, it is the broker here, and we allege, and the district court agreed on motion to dismiss, that we adequately alleged that they were a commodity trading advisor and was advising Prestwick and Maxi Partners throughout the entire time period. Now, once the account is introduced and opened, the future commission merchant is the one making the money off the account. Obviously, the introducing broker gets a small commission as well. But I think it's proper to put on the futures commission merchant the responsibility of at least some oversight over the introducing broker, which by definition tend to be small entities, not always, but certainly in this case. And they're making the money off it. And it doesn't seem to me to be a strain to read the guarantee agreement to continue for the term of when the account is open. If they say, look, we're having troubles
forever.
No, not at all. They can close it at any time. If they suspect, and I think that that's probably what happened
well,
here,
forever,
I think what discovery would show.
Forever unless they close the account and do the repaper.
Right. And I don't know whether there was more than one account to repay.
Is that true? Is it forever unless they close the account?
Yes. I think that that's right. And if we look at the 2006 agreement, and I just want to highlight this, it clearly only applies to new accounts. It says it right at the beginning. If it didn't also apply to old accounts, what happened to the old accounts? They're free-floating accounts with absolutely no agreement whatsoever covering the relationship between the FCM and the introducing broker, which also makes no sense.
Is there some sort of a premium that an FCM, when an FCM agrees to guarantee?
I don't know, Your Honor. Well, I don't know if there's a premium.
There's got to be a lot of risk.
Well, I think they pay. They take on the guarantee because an outfit like Prestwick would never invest through AccuVest unless there was a guarantee.
Yeah,
there's
got to
be a cloak
it,
of a guarantee.
Of course,
on
the guarantee is
a selling point.
Taking a risk, and then you get compensated. It's like insurance or anything else. You take a risk if you're protecting or guaranteeing something.
Well, you're getting the business. You're providing the guarantee. You're giving
a
selling point to
business.
The introducing broker. They get to say they're guaranteed by a large financial institution.
I understand that.
Which is one of our arguments is that if they could, get the introducing broker brings in a bunch of clients, and then the very next day the introducing broker, without notice to anybody, cuts off the guarantee, that's what they're submitting. And I don't think you can read that into the guarantee agreement, which clearly applied to accounts for the duration that they're open. Once they're opened under the guarantee, there's nothing the customer would find out under their theory about termination until there was a loss. And I just don't think looking at the totality of the regulations and the way the agreements are written, it's a reasonable interpretation.
Okay, so you're on the brink of running out of time, so I'll let you sit down now and give you about a minute. So, Mr. Iavaroni.
Yes. May it please the Court, Nick Iavaroni on behalf of PFG. I wanted to discuss the first question that you had, Your Honor. This idea of closing the accounts is ludicrous. Let me give you an example. Let's take that there is a farmer who has sold. He's decided, I sell my corn at $5.70 on the futures market for December delivery. I make good money. So he goes out. He doesn't want the price to go down. He sells out there. He takes, goes on the exchange, sells 60,000 bushels, which is what he's going to put it, 570. The market moves down to 540, let's say, so his insurance is working. The price is going to be less, but he's making money on the short position. Now, an introducing broker can only be with one firm at a time as a guarantor. So what has to happen for this farmer is he's got the positions at the old FCM. If they're going to transfer, if the accounts have to be closed, he's got to open an account here, which means now he's got to pay margin here while he's still paying margin there. He also has to liquidate this account and buy here. But because they're two separate FCMs, you can't do this simultaneously. You can't buy and sell. So what happens if he sells here at 540, but by the time this FCM executes, it's 525? He has lost 15 cents a bushel. Why? Why is the customer? Who would ever set up a system like that? We can also look at the regulations. The regulations require, if you're a guarantee agreement, you must supervise. That's what happens. We've cited 2-23 of the NFA regulations. You must supervise.
So let me, I understand those policy arguments, but as I said at the outset, there are profoundly unattractive features of both positions here, and it may be that Judge Barker's right that the only thing people can do is contract around it. The unattractive thing about the Prestwick position is this long tail liability, no supervision, and so forth. The unattractive thing about your position is luring people in with very attractive guarantees and then pulling the plug the next day and keeping your mouth shut about it and having just this $45,000 sitting there.
I don't believe, first of all, that's not true, number one.
Why is that not true?
Okay,
there's nothing in the law, apparently, that prevents you from doing
what
that.
What you may not like has nothing to do with FCMs. It has to do with the CFTC. The CFTC says, you know what, FCMs are fungible.
I understand that. Now, I'm just saying that there are unattractive aspects. Maybe, as the district court said, this is just an area of the law that's been so infected by special interest all over the place, it just leaves customers hopeless.
As you said, $45,000. But, you can go from an FCM.
$45,000 is a ridiculous number. Right.
You can go from an FCM that has $10 million, become an independent introducing broker at 45, and then go to an FCM that only has 250. But as far as the CFTC is concerned, minimum requirements are there. And you could have an FCM that has 100 introducing brokers where its capital is never going to be sufficient to cover everything. CFTC doesn't care about that.
But
what we must care about is the regulation, and the regulation is clear.
We're talking about Section 1.3 double N, right, this regulation.
We're talking about 1.10J7.
Okay, 1.10J7.
In particular, and there's no dispute that the agreement was terminated the way the statute or regulations required. And it says, the termination of a guarantee agreement by a futures commission merchant, retail foreign exchange dealer, or introducing broker, or the expiration of such an agreement shall not release any party for any liability or obligation arising from acts or omissions which occurred during the term of the agreement.
Okay,
and there
so
were
why
no acts or omissions here.
Act or omission not include opening an account? Opening an account is an act. So
there's no liability here for opening the account.
Well, you are saying that. That's more approximate cause kind of argument.
No, the account, there has to be damages, Judge. Otherwise anything could happen. It's an act or occurrence for which you owe an obligation to the customer. And that obligation is a financial obligation because you cost them money.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Just like we said on the motion to dismiss, we are only, and this court in Cunningham made it clear, this is vicarious liability. We did nothing
Cunningham
wrong.
Cunningham isn't quite on this topic.
Oh,
but
it's still vicarious liability. They dismissed. It's not a surety agreement. It's a guarantee agreement. We stand in the place of Acuvest to ensure the obligation.
Wait a minute, Mr. Iovorini. You're assuming the answer to the question that's before this court. Because if, I know you don't think this is true, and it may not be true, who knows, but if the guarantee applies to accounts that are opened during this time period, happens to be 04 to 06, the guarantee speaks of joint and several liability. If the guarantee does not, if the guarantee applies only to damages that are suffered between that period of time, these damages aren't suffered until 2007. So on the merits, there's a win. There's no mootness issue here. There's an issue about how far does this guarantee go.
How would you, if the idea of the whole regulatory scheme is for you to make an FCM liable so that the FCM is going to supervise, how can Peregrine supervise them when they're no longer a guaranteed IB? If they come, and if I'm the second FCM, why would I do anything? I know they can come and do whatever they want. I collect the commissions, but it's Peregrine that's going to get that. That makes no sense from a regulatory scheme whatsoever.
It's a reasonable policy argument. We're dealing with regulations that may or may not be sensible.
And to say that they're not going to know, remember there's a bright line that's, if you look at 1.10, J7, J8, and J9. If the guarantee agreement is canceled, the IB has to go out of business. It has to go out of business the next day. So if it's canceled and another substitute isn't there, they're out of business. And therefore, when you look at 7, 8, and 9, it's the acts. Did they do something that you should have prevented?
But what about this language? The guarantee covers with respect to the solicitation and transactions involving all commodity customers, et cetera, entered accounts of the IB entered into or after the effective date of this agreement. It doesn't say damages suffered
But then when you look at the last paragraph of that guarantee agreement, it says, notwithstanding this being terminated, you are responsible for acts and omissions that occur during the term. And that's the key. It's saying if you terminate this agreement, any act or omission that caused a loss, you're responsible for.
Sure,
and here I don't understand what the loss could be, because it was Maxi Partners that was the customer. If they get a PPM that says, me, I can change it at any time, how are they harmed? And what duty is there on Peregrine to tell them anything if the regulation says, Peregrine, you don't have to tell anybody anything. You can cancel it and find it.
I want to go back to the Maxi Partners being the customer, perhaps during the relevant time, because Prestwick, in the offering from Maxi Partners, agrees to let Maxi Partners change anything, brokerage and custodial arrangements. So I question whether it's necessary for this court even to delve into the meaning of this regulation if, in fact, Prestwick gave up on a private basis the right to have, you know, PFG as the guarantor versus, you know, a guaranteed broker or anybody else.
I am clear that was one of our basis for the motion for summary judgment, because they had the PPM.
Was Maxi Partners the whole time this guarantee is in effect?
They're the one that lost the money. They're the one that opened the account. They had it before it was canceled. They had it in 2007. They were the entity that lost the money, and then they were back in 2008. And I just don't see how under the opinions from this court on what it, when you get a PPM, you can't go back and say, well, I didn't read it, I didn't know it. I mean, this is a business entity. It's not some little old person sitting there. And if they wanted...
But the regulations don't draw a distinction. It could be a little old person sitting there in
could
the next
be there.
Case. This court can't.
Could be a little old business entity.
Could be a little old business, but not with a $7 million investment. But in any event, that's something that, if they wanted to, if it's important to me, and that doesn't mean it's right. They could have specified a giant firm like MF Global. It doesn't mean it's still going to be there. But people can specify, I want our account cleared by Merrill Lynch. I want our commodities account cleared by J.P. Morgan. People do that all the time. They chose not to do that. And they said,
they being Maxi Partners.
Maxi Partners said, you know, this is on a public website. You can see who guarantees who on the CFTC and the NFA keeps who's the guarantor. But
so if they've been checking that website every day, they would have spotted the moment at which it stops.
But and I'm not saying that's something people should do, but one of the easy things is if it's important to me, let me know. Let me know if you're going to change. If you're going to change the broker, if you're going to change the executing brokers on the floor, there's a lot of different people in this that can affect your liability and the success of it. And if you're really interested in it, other than looking for a deep pocket during a time when the CFTC said AccuVest, you're on your own. And I think that the guarantee, I think it's important for you to realize it worked. There was no fraud from 2004 to 2006 while AccuVest was being supervised by PFG, and there was none after 2008. So the regulatory system worked. The fraud was committed.
The $45,000
part. Well, but that's the CFTC. You know, if they think that $45,000 is enough, you know. So I think that this is clear. I also think that if we look at it, I really do think the motion, they released AccuVest on that dismissal. They're gone.
Well, that, again, I think that presupposes the answer to the merits, because if there's joint and several liability, they can release AccuVest and continue to go after
PFG. They didn't release. They dismissed them with prejudice.
Dismissed, whatever.
Right.
If there's joint and several liability, you can go after the other entities.
Look at all of the things. This is only vicarious liability here.
So you say, but they say it's joint and several liability.
Look at Cunningham. I think this court has said when you're looking under
the language of the agreement.
Pardon?
Depends on the language of the instrument.
And it's called the guarantee agreement.
And it also says there's joint and several liability in it. So, okay.
But the regulation makes clear what that liability is, I believe. 10-J7. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. You have about a minute, Mr. Smith.
Counsel for PFG started off by saying what the parade of horribles would be if the accounts were closed to end the perpetual liability and the difficulties of moving the accounts from one FCM to a second FCM and all the difficulties. If it's going to be moved to another FCM, the account's going to be closed at Peregrine and reopened at a new FCM. There's not going to be two accounts with the same funds in them. It will necessarily be closed. So I didn't follow it when it was briefed, and I don't follow it now, how that's a problem. The accounts will be closed if it's moved to another FCM. Here, that didn't happen. It stayed at Peregrine. They continued to make all the money they made on a $20 million account, and nothing changed. I just want to create a misquotation. At the end of the guarantee agreement, it says that the termination of the agreement will not affect, this is a quote from counsel for BFG, the acts or omissions of the IB during the term of the agreement. That's not what it says. It will not affect the obligations incurred by the IB during the term of the agreement. The obligations are with respect to the account that was opened during the term of the agreement. This issue of whether Maxi Partners is the customer or Prestwick is not is a red herring. Prestwick is a customer of AccuVest. AccuVest introduced them to the commodity pool. AccuVest advised them to invest both directly in PFG and through Maxi Partners. When Prestwick sought to redeem their investments, they went to AccuVest. AccuVest processed the redemption. AccuVest.
Okay, I think we have the point. So.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel.